Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, we often forget everything. Beginning on the land ends in the sea. As desperate as the situation of terrestrial pollution is, in the ocean, the effects are amplified, concentrated, and brought back to us with the inevitability of the next tide. Paul Watson has spent a lifetime on and in the service of the ocean. A founding member of Greenpeace, he left that iconic organization at the height of its effectiveness to found the Sea Shepherd Society, renowned for its direct action against whaling, most spectacularly intercepting the massive factory fleet ships of Japan, Norway, and Russia. Sea Shepherd has also exposed and shut down hundreds of other ecologically destructive commercial ventures and activities. Now, Watson is helming another venture, the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, whose mission to save life in the sea is simply stated, if the ocean dies, we die. Welcome back to the program, Paul.
Oh, well, thank you. My pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, of course, Paul, and a lot has changed since our first conversation in the year 2000, and sadly, a lot hasn't, too. But firstly, Paul, what is the Captain Paul Watson Foundation?
I established the Captain Paul Watson Foundation last summer after I was removed from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, an organization that I had founded and established 45 years ago. But they changed the direction. They got the control of the board, changed the direction to somewhere that I did not want to go. And when I said, look, I can't support this new change of direction, their response was, well, you're an employee, so you do what you're told. And I said, no, I don't think so. They said that I was too controversial, too confrontational. They even said I was my history was an embarrassment to them because of our direct action campaigns. And they wanted to move in a direction of research and working in partnership with governments and corporations. And I said, I can't support that, you know. So starting all over again, but we still have, you know, the passion and the courage that we've always had with our crew members. I've got a lot of veteran crew members. We've got ourselves a ship, and we're preparing for our first campaign to Iceland this summer to protect endangered fin whales.
Well, that's Operation Piacan. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, it's called Operation Piacan. You know, the whale that's the hero in Avatar, The Way of Water, is called Piacan. It's spelt differently, but Chief Piacan of the Amazon was a friend of mine, and he recently passed away. So I decided, well, we can sort of link the two. You know, I couldn't get hold of Cameron to get permission to use his character, but I can certainly use Piacan's name. So it accomplishes, the link.
Well, is this severance from Sea Shepherd? This sounds like an echo of what happened with Greenpeace. Is that accurate?
Pretty much. You know, I think the success of Whale Wars got Sea Shepherd got to be quite large. And, you know, then people got jobs and people got comfortable in those jobs and forgot really why it was set up in the first place.
Paul, can you describe what Whale Wars is for those that don't have cable?
Oh, sorry. A television show on Animal Planet that we did between 2007 and 2014, where we went down to the Southern Ocean with TV crews and filmed our interactions with the Japanese whaling fleet. It was a campaign that was ultimately successful, ended the television show because we ended whaling in the Southern Ocean. So that was what that is all about. But we're actually going to restart Whale Wars with this campaign in Iceland. And I anticipate Japan will be returning to the Southern Ocean next year because they're completing the construction of a $67 million factory ship. And the only purpose for a factory ship is to go to the Southern Ocean. So we intend to be there to greet them when they return.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people, they might assume that, you know, whaling is something from the 19th and early 20th century. It's certainly at this late date, it can't still be going on. But in fact,
well, more whales were killed between 1940 and today than killed in all the years prior to 1940. And whaling, though, we have stamped it out in many places. We've ended it in Australia and in Spain and South Africa and Chile and South Korea. But it continues by Japan, Norway, Denmark, and Iceland. And so my lifelong ambition is to eradicate this thing, this perversion that I call it, of whaling, the killing of these highly intelligent, socially complex, sentient, self-aware creatures, which I equate to being to murder. So I've dedicated my life to it, and I will, for the rest of my life, do everything I can to eradicate whaling.
Well, mass murder, I guess I would add to that.
Yeah, they're serial. This guy named Christian Lofsson in Iceland, he's a serial killer. He's sort of like a modern day Captain Ahab. He just loves to kill whales. And we're hoping to shut him down permanently this summer. So we'll see how it goes. But we do intend to save as many whales, the lives of as many whales as we possibly can.
Well, as dramatic, Paul, as the whaling ships and their harpoons, their explosive-tipped harpoons and everything is, that's not the only threat faced by whales. Of course, there's pollution and the loss of their food sources through overfishing of krill, for example, and also the sonic invasion of military and the noise created by commercial and recreational fleets as well, as we see here on Vancouver Island with the orca.
Yeah, and also there's quite a number of humpback and right whales that have been washing ashore on the eastern seaboard from New Jersey up to Massachusetts. And the cause for that is actually the construction of offshore wind turbines, these big windmills, because to drive the piles in to anchor them to the bottom creates tremendous decibel levels, which I believe is shattering the eardrums of these whales and forcing them to die on the beaches. So, but people don't re a lot of environmentalists don't want to talk about it because, well, we need alternative power. But I say, if you want to have your windmills, put them on land. Let's not destroy marine ecosystems just so they can have an alternative energy supply. And there's also, I believe, that the vibrations caused by the turbines themselves create a high decibel level in the ocean.
Yeah, people may not realize just how important hearing is to these various species of whales.
Well, yeah, whales see with their ears. That's pretty much sums it up. With their echolocation abilities, they navigate, they communicate, and all of this is disrupted by these high decibel levels.
Well, I was looking at one of the videos on your site, the paulwatsonfoundation.org, and it was of a very young Paul Watson talking. And this is like circa 1970s, I guess, when you're talking about when you got into this in the first place, and you were talking about the killing of sperm whales by the Russian fleets for spermaceti oil, as you describe it. That was being used for ballistic missiles. What about the military? I know that the military have a pretty much carte blanche when it comes to polluting the oceans, but I haven't seen a lot of focus on the roles of course, the American, but even the Canadian military too.
Whales have been killed for the last 100 years from the military. In World War I, whale oil was used to make explosives, also used to oil people, the soldiers' feet in the trenches. And what they've been used for from the 50s on is as a high heat-resistant lubricating oil for intercontinental ballistic missiles. That's what struck me back in 1975. I said, here we're killing these incredibly beautiful, wonderful, intelligent creatures for the purpose of making a weapon meant for the mass extermination of human beings. And that's just insane.
Well, when Greenpeace came out, and it was, I'm old enough to remember, but I think a lot of our listeners probably weren't even born then, but it was green and it was peace. And the idea was to marry the peace movement with ecology. Has that been lost in the translation since, do you think?
Well, originally that happened because the Greenpeace came together from two organizations, the Sierra Club, that was the green part of it, and the Quakers, which is the peace part of it. And I think with the beginning of the whale campaigns with Greenpeace, the Quakers dropped out of the equation. And that's not surprising, consider the Yankee whaling fleets were run by the Quakers. But, you know, it sort of drifted away after that. You know, Greenpeace has some really good ideas. Most importantly, the understanding of how media works and how to bring these messages to the public through media. But it also got big and cumbersome, and, you know, you don't hear that much about them these days. I've always felt that the strength of any movement has to lie in diversity and interdependence of small groups. We need thousands and thousands of small grassroots organizations addressing thousands and thousands of local issues. But once you get into the realm of what Greenpeace is now, World Wildlife, and what Sea Shepherd is becoming, you know, it just becomes a big bureaucracy that can't do anything because of fear of upsetting this country or upsetting this corporation. And so I was actually offered $300,000 to be the quiet figurehead for Sea Shepherd. Just shut up, don't post anything, and enjoy the money. And I said, no, I'm not going to accept that. So that, you know, I just quit.
I was looking at the statement, and they said that that you walked away, that you weren't forced out, that, you know, and they were saying, happy trails, essentially.
Well, you know, I was not going to remain in an organization that had compromised itself. I resigned from Sea Shepherd's board in Australia because Australia is in collaboration with a company called Austral Fisheries, which is a toothfish company down in the Southern Ocean. And that's a company 50% owned by a Japanese fishing company, which also owned whaling ships. And I said, look, I need some questions. I have questions I need answers to. What is the nature of this collaboration? And I couldn't get the answers. It really came down to they were supplying them. They sold them a ship at a discount. They gave them donations of money and fuel and equipment. And I said, we can't take donations from a fishing company, from a whaling company. And they said, well, we need those donations because, well, you know, Sea Shepherd Australia's got very big. They got a lot of employees. You know, they're more concerned about their own security. Now, I have to say there are some Sea Shepherd groups which are remaining loyal and true to our original objectives, and that's France, the UK, and Brazil. And I'm continuing to work with them. But Sea Shepherd now is suing France, saying that France has no right to use the logos or the name. And Sea Shepherd is suing me, and I'm not even using the logos or the name. They're suing me, saying I don't have a right to use my own name because my name is – and this is why I named it the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, because they can't take that away from me. But now the lawsuit is that my name is too closely connected with Sea Shepherd, and therefore, according to the court documents, it represents unfair trade practices, which is causing irreparable damage to their brand, as they call it. So nice. They're defending their brand while – I'm trying to defend life in the ocean.
Well, maybe you could become known as the captain formerly known as Paul Watson.
Yeah. Well, they shut down my Facebook page, disabled it permanently for trademark violations, because I found out after they shut it down that even if I use the word Sea Shepherd, that's a trademark violation. And one of the funniest things about it is that I had posted a picture of a shirt that Sea Shepherd Germany is selling with a Sea Shepherd logo, and on the bottom is a quote by me with my name. That is a trademark violation.
Oh, brother. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Captain Paul Watson. He spent a lifetime on and in the service of the oceans. He's now helming a new venture, as you're hearing, the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. We talked about Operation Piacan, and your new ship, the John Paul DeJoria. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, John Paul DeJoria was a supporter for Sea Shepherd, and we had a ship in Mexico protecting the Paquita called the John Paul DeJoria. It's a former U.S. Coast Guard vessel. And they scrapped that vessel. They scrapped a number of our vessels. And John Paul called me up, and he said, why are they scrapping this vessel? I said, I don't know. He called up them, and they said, it was getting old, needed to be scrapped, which wasn't true. And he said, well, why didn't you just give it to Paul? And they said, well, we offered it to him, but he turned it down. And I said, you know, JP, that's a lie. They never offered it to me. So what he said, and this was last September, find me a ship, I'll buy it for you. So we found a ship, he bought it, and that's our first ship.
Well, and when you were still with the previous organization that I won't name anymore, lest I get sued or whited out of history, it was famous for having famous names, nameplates on it from big-time supporters.
And many of them are coming over to support me. Pamela Anderson, Martin Sheen, John Paul DeJoria, Brian Adams, for instance, are coming over. As Sea Shepherd supporters find out what's happening, and it's difficult for them to find out because Sea Shepherd isn't informing them. But as they find out, then they come over and support me. So I've got a couple of hundred crew applications. My ship right now is crewed by former veterans of campaigns, people I went to sea with. And so I think that we're going to rebuild and recover and continue the work that we've been doing. It's being made difficult, but I mean, the thing I find most incredible is that the person in charge of Sea Shepherd today, this guy named Pritam Singh, he holds hunting and fishing licenses in Alaska and in Florida and owns a fishing lodge in Alaska. He's a Florida property developer. That's who's controlling Sea Shepherd today. In 2020, we found out that the French trawling fleet was killing dolphins as bycatch, and it was out of sight and out of mind. The bodies were washing up on the beaches, but nobody really noticed. So I said to Lamy Assemblée, the president of Sea Shepherd France, let's take those bodies and put them in front of the Eiffel Tower, put them on the steps of the National Assembly, on the steps of the European Parliament. And that is what they did. And as a result, last week, finally, France has announced that they're going to be closing that fishery and to protect the dolphins. The killing of the dolphins was illegal under French law and illegal under EU regulations, but we just had to lean on them to actually step in and enforce it. That's the problem in the ocean today. I mean, recently we had the High Seas Treaty, which everybody was patting themselves on the back and saying how wonderful this is. And it is if you have enforcement. But without enforcement, it's just words on paper, means nothing.
Well, and who would be the enforcers of such a treaty? The navies in the nearest proximity to hunting grounds and so on?
Well, it's a UN treaty, so I would assume that members of the UN would be willing to uphold that. But, you know, there's a complete lack of economic and political motivation to uphold international law on the high seas. It's the Wild West out there. Mm-hmm. And nobody seems to be eager to actually go out and stop the destruction of the fisheries. Worldwide fisheries are being overfished to a point that many of the fisheries have collapsed, and in a few years all of them will certainly collapse. We're taking too much too fast, and since 1950 there's been a 40% diminishment in phytoplankton populations in the sea. 40%. And what does phytoplankton do? It provides us with 70% of the oxygen in the air we breathe and sequesters enormous amounts of CO2. If phytoplankton disappears from the sea, we die. We do not live on this planet without phytoplankton. It is the foundation for life on the planet. And unfortunately, hardly anybody knows that. And why is it being diminished? Because we're killing off whales and dolphins and seabirds, all of those species that actually are farmers to the phytoplankton. They provide the nutrients for the phytoplankton in the form of feces in their bodies. And that nutrients are like magnesium, iron, and nitrogen. And when you lack those nutrients, you're going to see a diminishment in phytoplankton. You know, the jungles of the world, the forests of the world provide us with, you know, between 30-35% of the oxygen. But phytoplankton is really the major supplier. And when phytoplankton goes, we go.
Well, almost every child knows about the food chain. Maybe they're not taught that the chain is actually circular, but there it is all the same. When we first talked so many years ago now, Paul, I said in the introduction to that, I said, here's Paul Watson on Norway's expanded commerce in whale products, the Faroes grind hunt, and cultural hunting of whales as well. These things are all still with us after all these years. Does that ever dishearten you?
Well, it's been diminished. We've shut down whaling in a lot of countries. Australia used to be whaling up until 1977. South Africa, Spain, so many countries. So we've achieved a lot. We, you know, got the Japanese out of the Southern Ocean. And but, you know, it's a never-ending battle. But I don't get depressed and I don't get pessimistic because, you know, we don't have any control over the future. But what we can control is the present. And what we do in the present will define what the future will be. So I concentrate on doing everything I can to address these issues in the present with, you know, basically with the courage and the passion of the crew members who are with me. We're actually able to achieve a lot.
Well, there's also a podcast at the website, the CPWF website, Captain Paul Watson Foundation. You're not hosting it, but you appear often on it as well. What about media outreach and how people can tune in to what you're trying to do over there?
Well, of course, you know, what we're going to do this summer with our campaign to Iceland is to revive the Whale Wars show to do a television series. We're also working on different films and documentaries and drama series and everything. The media is very, very important. I've always said that the most powerful weapon on the planet is the camera. And if it isn't on camera, well, then it didn't really happen. So we have to make sure that what we do gets out to people. So I spend a lot of time writing and working on, you know, books and magazine articles and videos and things like that. It's very important.
Tell me about your books, too, because you've got a commerce site at the paulwatson.com, and you feature your books, which there's quite a number of them, a dozen at least that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, I mean, they range from poetry to history, like the War That Saved the Whales, to campaigns that we've done, like The Death of a Whale is that book on the macaw campaign, for example.
Just down the road.
And I have a book coming out this summer called called Hitman for the Kindness Club, about everything I've done since I was 10 years old to protect animals.
Yeah, the macaw are a band just south of where I am here in Victoria, and I did a story on them about 22 years ago or something on their cultural whaling that almost got the show taken off the air. Then there was attempts made by various groups to have the show canceled because of that. Are they still conducting their cultural hunt? It wasn't very popular.
No, and we were invited in 1998 into that situation by elders of the Macaw Nation. This is not a traditional hunt by any means. As Alberta Thompson, who's one of the elders, said, you know, our culture included weaving baskets and picking berries in the mountains and learning our language. It's not about taking an anti-tank gun and murdering a whale. And so the problem is that the media took on this as sort of a cowboys and Indians thing, and the Indians were right no matter what they did, except that it wasn't so black and white. The elders, I said over and over again, if the elders and the Macaw Nation want us to leave, we will leave. But they never did. They asked us to stay. And so there was a conflict within the tribe over this whole thing. But there's no legitimate reason for them to be killing gray whales. They should be protected. And as Alberta Thompson said, the whaling was part of our history. Now we have an obligation and a responsibility to do what we can to preserve and protect them.
Yeah, well, it's been a part of a lot of our histories as well. And part of your history is something that I'm just looking at, Voice of America, a curious site to pick up a story on you. But they mentioned that you were presented in Paris with the Jules Verne Award for your role as protector of the environment. How do you keep your feet on the ground with such honorifics?
They're nice, but, you know, I don't know really what they mean. I think the one advantage of having those kind of awards, like the Amazon Peace Prize that I got in 2007 and such, is that it helps politically if I have to deal with the issues, like for the fact that I'm on the Interpol red notice or things like that. So those things kind of help in that respect. But other than that, they're not that important. What is important is saving lives. And what is important is making sure that we protect our ecosystems that support us. There are three laws of ecology. The first is the law of diversity, that the strength of an ecosystem lies in the diversity within that ecosystem. The second is the law of interdependence, that all species within an ecosystem are interdependent with each other. We need each other. And the third is the law of finite resources. There's a limit to growth and a limit to carrying capacity. And when one species steals the carrying capacity of other species, it causes diminishment in both diversity and interdependence. So if people lived in accordance to those three basic laws of ecology, I think we could get by. I also like to compare, you know, to put it this way. If you look at the planet as a spaceship, which is what it is, we're on this incredible voyage around the Milky Way galaxy, and every spaceship has a life support system that provides us with the food we eat and the air we breathe and regulates climate and temperature. And that support system is run by engineers, crews of engineers, not us. We humans, we're passengers. We're having a wonderful time amusing ourselves. But what we're doing is we're murdering the engineers. We're killing them off. The bees, the worms, you know, microbes, trees, the whales. And there's only so many engineers you can kill before that machinery begins to fall apart. And the ship goes down, and we go down as passengers. We go down with it.
Yeah, and it seems every day we're a little closer to that reality, but the fight is important, of course, and I thank you for your continued efforts through the various adversity, and thanks a lot for coming on today, Paul. Again, it's paulwatsonfoundation.org, and I found you just incidentally, Paul, through just on Twitter. Somebody was reacting to the krill fishery in the Southern Ocean, and saying that they were wiping out the krill down there.
Yeah, and why they're going after krill is, one, for so-called krill oil tablets for a health supplement. But the major reason is to provide a cheap protein paste for feeding factory farmed animals like chickens and pigs and domestic salmon. So we're wiping out the oceans, you know, the foundation of life in the ocean to support these factory farms. And in addition, the factory farms are constantly transmitting zoonotic viruses. And, you know, that's why you see the massacre of millions of ducks or chickens or pigs going on every year to try and keep those viral outbreaks out of control. And we're only going to be able to do that so long. Right now, we're being threatened with bird flu, and that's one of the reasons that you've seen a reduction or an increase in egg prices because of the millions of chickens that they've had to be killed because of the outbreak of this bird flu.
Well, veganism is an attractive option for anybody who's worried about those issues. Thanks again for coming on, Paul. And I want to thank Jillian McGuire, too, and encourage her and the BCTF to divest from oil and other killing industry. Thanks again, and thanks for all the work you've done over these very many long years, Captain Paul Watson.
Well, thank you very much.
Nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favourite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Definition. I saw it on this page's last class. Where is that? I can't find it. Oh, I want to die. Tomorrow is the due date, but I still couldn't find the definition. Anybody helps me? It is easy to find the students who have the study stress before or after the deadlines, or the other modern stress hits people's mind. Find Work, Wellness, and Disability Prevention Institute that could have some of the professions help you get out of this stress or decrease the several extents of them. Finding at Work, Wellness, and disabilitypreventioninstitute.org.
Speak.